Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on February 15th, 2021 from James Island. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. In this episode, we talk Black History Month with USC's Dr. Bobby Donaldson. We look at the legislative week ahead, hear about food insecurity in the state, get an update on encouraging state revenue numbers, and crunch some other numbers of the nearly non-existent flu season. And we got so much more. And we hope you all had a great Valentine's Day, a solemn President's Day, and a very happy Mardi Gras. That's right, this podcast is dropping on Mardi Gras. Give me a second line. You don't want to know what I've had to do for some beads, folks. You just don't. And honestly, we shouldn't be happy. This could be a horrible Mardi Gras, but we're all together. I should be down in New Orleans, but I'm not. I'm here with you. I'm so happy about that. It's okay. It's all right. Anyway, tell us how you're celebrating, or you celebrated the carnival season. You can leave us a message on our voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and how you celebrated the holiday weekend. Whether it was Valentine's Day, President's Day, Mardi Gras, did you have a king cake? Did you find the baby? Do you even know what I'm talking about? 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 7,180 confirmed deaths, and currently there are 427,763 confirmed cases being reported in all 46 counties as of February 5th at 4 p.m. Our current percent positive rate is 6.5%. There are 1,222 patients hospitalized with COVID-19. 301 are in intensive care, and 173 patients are on ventilators right now. Also, here's a little vaccine update. There have been 512,045 first doses of vaccine administered in the state, and currently 164,681 second doses have been administered as well. So we're chugging along now, 2 months into having the vaccine in our state. Stick your arm out for Gavin. Stick your arm out for me. Let's start our politics section off with some history. Yes, we all need to get better about reading and understanding our history. I think so many of our problems would be resolved, or at least debated better, if we all were a little bit more educated in the history realm. I will admit that that's a great side benefit of covering the legislature, is occasionally you get to hear some great history lessons from floor debate. Only occasionally, though. But I recently spoke with USC history professor Dr. Bobby Donaldson about the need for understanding not just history, but Black history in particular. Professor Donaldson is also the director of the Center for Civil Rights History and Research at USC, and I opened our discussion on This Week in South Carolina by asking about the important role the month plays.
It becomes a launching pad that we can do a deep dive into important aspects of our nation and our state's history that are often overlooked. And this is that window of time when you can get a sense of the lay of the land and figure out, you know, what do you do in March, April and May and June and all through the rest of the year? Because there is such a rich and extraordinary history of our state that still needs to be fully documented and fully told to all citizens.
And it was interesting because I was doing research on Black History Month, and my alma mater, Kent State, I didn't know this until I read about it, was one of the first places to start celebrating Black History Month in 1970, which I thought was really fascinating there, because it started there and then 6 years later became a national thing. I want to talk about integrating more history into history books there, Professor. And it seems like we kind of go from, you know, okay, here's Harriet Tubman, here's Frederick Douglass, fast forward to Rosa Parks. I mean, are history books getting any better when we look at like elementary, high school teaching? Obviously, when you get to college level, things can get a little bit more nuanced. You can learn a lot more. But are we seeing better integration into history, into, you know, how African Americans helped shape this country today?
The answer is yes. I think there has been an active and an intentional effort to revise a lot of the longstanding history, traditional things that have been largely incorrect or have been misconstrued. So when students come to the university and they take my intro U.S. history course, they do come a little more, not always excited about history, by the way, but at least more informed about history. And I do believe that there is still a real need to tell a more inclusive and comprehensive story, particularly as it relates to South Carolina. So you just mentioned Frederick Douglass, and I suppose most visitors can tell us one or two things about Frederick Douglass, but few can probably tell you about one of his colleagues, whose name was Joseph H. Rainey. Well, who is Joseph H. Rainey? Joseph H. Rainey is the first African-American elected to the United States House of Representatives from South Carolina. He was from Georgetown. And only now are we beginning to understand the extraordinary career that he led in the Reconstruction era. You mentioned Harriet Tubman. Well, some may not know about a woman named Celia Dow Saxon, a local teacher in Columbia who taught for 55 years, who advocated for the teaching of Black history in the 1920s and 1930s. And so the more we dig, the more we know. The more we dig, the more we realize what we do not know. And so that's, again, why I think having months like this and the work that is happening across the country is so important.
I want to talk about, since you brought up monuments, I want to talk about the role of Confederate monuments. Obviously, it's been a very hot topic. I was down in Marion Square last year when John C. Calhoun's statue was removed. Tell me about this debate. You don't have to tell me, you know, we don't get too political on it. I just want to know what you'd say to people when they say, you know, are we erasing history when we're taking down monuments? Obviously, the history still stands. A monument is just a public monument to that history. But elaborate on that for folks who say you're whitewashing history, you're getting rid of these things from history. What's your response to that?
Well, first, I say I'm a professor of history. I've studied this a great deal. My roots are in South Carolina. My great-great-grandfather's whose name was Alex Williams. Alex Williams served from 1861 to 1865 in the Confederate Army. He was a Negro. He was a servant to a white man from Aiken County. He received a pension for being in the Confederate Army. And so I come at this very biased, but I believe that each monument should be scrutinized. And each monument should be scrutinized to the degree to which they tell a complete history. I've kind of evolved over time. Initially, I was of the mind that you kind of strike a balance. But I do believe there are some monuments that deserve to be removed and put elsewhere. They do not deserve to be on the grounds of a state house. But if we do come to a compromise that they deserve, they will stay there, then tell the whole history. A classic example is a name I just mentioned a moment ago, Benjamin Tillman. Well, when you read the monument, if you are a fifth grader coming in from Clarendon County or coming in from Lamar, South Carolina, you read that statue, you get a very skewed history of Ben Tillman. You don't see anything that says that he was one of the leaders of the Hamburg massacre, a terrorist overtaking of a Black community. You don't read anything about the fact that he championed lynching, that he championed disfranchisement. So again, if you want a statue to stand, tell a complete history of the individual.
So is that something?
If you don't want that complete history to be told, remove it.
That was a really great interview that I had with Dr. Donaldson. You can find that on our YouTube page, youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. Make sure you subscribe too. We've had 25,000 people subscribe to our YouTube page right now. Become one of them. And also, if you want to read some more history, there are several great books out there that you should check out, as well as interviews done by Dr. Walter Edgar, including one on the book called Stories of Struggle by Claudia Smith Brinson, and In Darkest South Carolina, J. Wadey's Waring and the Secret Plan That Sparked a Civil Rights Movement. That's by Brian Hicks. Those interviews with Dr. Walter Edgar are on southcarolinapublicradio.org. And I also learned a lot about the history of education and all the ramifications involving it by reading Schoolhouse Burning by USC professor Dr. Black. So some great recommendations right there, important books to read. And of course, you can always read Dr. Walter Edgar's History of South Carolina. That's just like, you know, foundational right there, folks. Thick but good. Next up, if you didn't know, the Senate acquitted former President Donald Trump on the article of impeachment for inciting an insurrection by a vote of 57 to 43 on Saturday. Seven Republicans joined Democrats in the vote, which was 10 votes short needed for a conviction. Sarah Lindsey Graham, who voted for acquittal, took to Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace to discuss the trial and what the former president is thinking right now. Here's part of that interview, which also includes what Graham thinks about comments from former U.S. United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley on Trump in a recent Politico magazine piece.
Yeah, I spoke to him last night. He was grateful to his lawyers. He appreciated the help that all of us provided. He's ready to move on and rebuild the Republican Party. He's excited about 2022. And I'm going to go down to talk with him next week, play a little golf in Florida. And I said, Mr. President, this MAGA movement needs to continue. We need to unite the party. Trump plus is the way back in 2022. He's mad at some folks, but I understand that. My goal is to win in 2022 to stop the most radical agenda I've seen coming out of the Democratic presidency of Joe Biden. We can't do that without Donald Trump, so he's ready to hit the trail, and I'm ready to work with him.
Senator, one final question. Nikki Haley, the former governor of your state of South Carolina, made some pretty tough comments about Donald Trump this week. I want to put them up on the screen. She said he went down a path he shouldn't have, and we shouldn't have followed him, and we shouldn't have listened to him, and we can't let that ever happen again. Senator, is Governor Haley wrong about Donald Trump's future in the Republican Party?
Yeah, Donald Trump is the most vibrant member of the Republican Party. The Trump movement is alive and well. People believe that he brought change to Washington. Policy-wise, it was long overdue. All I can say is that the most potent force in the Republican Party is President Trump. We need Trump plus, and at the end of the day, I've been involved in politics for over 25 years. The president is a handful, and what happened on January the 6th was terrible for the country, but he's not singularly to blame. Democrats have sat on the sidelines and watched the country be burned down for a year and a half and hadn't said a damn word, and most Republicans are tired of the hypocrisy. So no, Nikki's wrong about President Trump.
All right there. Well, just a glimpse of how things are looking with the Republican Party these days. And also, that Tim Alberta piece in Politico is a very in-depth look at Haley, and you may even recognize some of the players in it as well. So check it out there on Politico. And finally, in this section, we have a little curtain raiser for you for this week in the State House. On Tuesday, there is a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on two Santee Cooper reform bills and a Finance Subcommittee hearing on charter school district funding and teacher step increases. In the House on Tuesday morning, there's an ad hoc committee to study DHEC's receipt and distribution of COVID-19 vaccines, and then hearings later Tuesday on teacher vaccinations. You can see other meetings planned and live streams for them on scstatehouse.gov. And before we go, several House Republicans last week signed on to H 3875. It's a resolution stating that pornography is a public health hazard and calls for the regulation of it on the internet to ensure compliance with obscenity laws of the state. It was referred to House Judiciary. You can find out more about that bill, H 3875, and all things state legislature at scstatehouse.gov. There is no pornography on the site. Food insecurity has always been a problem in our state and country, but it is one that has only gotten worse with the pandemic. Scott Morgan with South Carolina Public Radio has this important report.
First, some good news. South Carolina's produce rich. We grow a lot of food here. Bad news.
It is much easier or cheaper to run to the dollar menu at a fast food place or one of the dollar stores or those kind of things if you have limited funds.
That sobering assessment is courtesy of Mike Darrow, who says that just because there's abundant fresh food in the state doesn't mean everybody can get it. That, of course, puts a strain on his job as the executive director of Feeding the Carolinas, a food bank whose vision statement is to see that everyone in the Carolinas has equitable access to healthy food.
That becomes a challenge when your volume is literally up 50 or 60% in terms of the number of people that we're serving because of the pandemic. People have lost their jobs, hours cut, and they don't know how they're going to pay for either food or medicine or food or housing. And so they're coming to us. A good third of those, the increase in volume, are from people who have never been to a food bank before.
That part about access to healthy food is the tough one. While food banks usually have it, a lot of food sellers do not. Fresh produce and lean meats are not nearly as ubiquitous as bags of snacks and packs of fatty lunch meats, items readily available to people living in lower income neighborhoods.
They have access to foods, but the foods aren't great. You know, their access to food might be Dollar General because it's right there.
Shanna Sykes is part of the Rural Health and Nutrition Program team at Clemson University's Health Extension.
And you know, if you've ever been in Dollar General, they don't offer a lot of healthy varieties of food.
The South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control monitors pre-existing health conditions in state residents who have died from the coronavirus. According to that data, almost two-thirds of South Carolinians who've died from COVID had cardiovascular disease, and nearly half had diabetes, exactly the kinds of conditions poor diets lead to. But this is where we need to warn you about jumping to conclusions just because all the steps look like they make sense.
Especially the early information that came out about potential interactions between diet and COVID infections or severity was very hypothetical.
Dr. Jessie Hoffman is a nutritionist and professor at Winthrop University. She says it's still way too early to draw direct links between COVID and diet.
And I will say a lot of it still remains to be hypothetical. There is some associative data coming out, but to be completely frank, diet is not on the top of people's lists for intervening with COVID right now.
So while it's tempting to see a causation pattern between poor diet and death from COVID, the data is just not there yet to know if that's right. What is there is that people from low and moderate income homes are a lot less likely to get Fuji apples than they are to get shrink-wrapped apple pies in a convenience store. Thanks to COVID, there are quite a few more homes that fit that description of low and moderate income than there were a year ago. And if those homes have kids in them, it's been even worse.
The pandemic has truly created a public health issue when it comes to food insecurity regarding school-age kids.
Dr. Lakeisha Tucker is a professor at South Carolina State University and acting chair of its Department of Human Resources. She says that while school is in session, access to breakfast and lunch is available. But over breaks, or over weekends, food insecurity goes from being a big problem to being a big problem that creates other big problems.
We do know that the lack of food or food insecurity does impact academics, behavior, as well as attendance if they were in school. So it's definitely important that we take a look at how do we continue to allow students to have access to food.
School districts in South Carolina have, for the most part, been able to keep lunch programs going, even over summer break last year. But much of the effort has been funded by people in the community who want to help and who've supplemented official funding allotments. Noble, but who knows how sustainable as the pandemic drags on.
And Scott tells me that you should check out his story on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org for more details and resources. Thank you, Scott. From food insecurity to some financial security, South Carolina's fiscal picture continues to improve. The South Carolina Board of Economic Advisors, known as the BEA, no, not the DEA, the BEA, reported Friday that the state's economic activity has performed better than anticipated, as state tax collections through January have outpaced projections for the current fiscal year by approximately $440.2 million. Now, you may remember we reported something similar in January, and once again, collections are outpacing projections, which means good, that this is good news, people. But the BEA did caution that excess tax collections are not always indicative of a surging economy, and that significant uncertainty remains about the course of recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. So good, but let's just, you know, be cautiously optimistic here, people. Now, uncertainty remains, of course, because a driving force for so much of that growth has been federal stimulus, including direct payments to individuals, additional aid for the unemployed, and grants and loans to business owners. The BEA noted employment is improving better than expected, but remains below pre-pandemic levels. Currently, the state's employment stands at 88% of pre-pandemic levels. The BEA still anticipates a return to February 2020 employment levels in February 2022. So, gotta wait a year more until we get back to those levels back before the pandemic. So they say. That's what they're anticipating. Now, are you traveling domestically on an aeroplane right now? Well, first off, you can't be listening during takeoff. You guys, turn it off. I'm just kidding, unless you're in airplane mode. Also, keep your mask on. I get it. You're on a plane. No, you keep your mask on. You don't have to take your mask off to hear me. Yeesh. Haven't you ever been on a plane before? Now, you know because you're on a plane that masks are required for interstate travel. But a negative test is not domestically. Here we go. Federal officials were considering a negative test as a prerequisite for domestic travel. But the CDC is not recommending it at this time, according to a statement provided to CNN on Friday night. The statement reads in part that, quote, as part of our close monitoring of the pandemic, in particular the continued spread of variants, we will continue to review public health options for containing and mitigating spread of COVID-19 in the travel space. Quote. So now, if you're traveling into the United States, you have to show proof of a negative test from no more than 3 days before the flight. So we're looking at you, Jakarta Tom, or Roman over in Dubai. You guys, 3 days before you can fly back in, which I'm guessing takes like 3 days to basically get here anyway. Ooh, that's a lot. A lot to deal with. Again, you do not need to take your mask off to hear that segment. Keep it back on. Also, if you have a NetJets card, you have to holler at the SC Lead Pod because we're only flying private these days and we can't afford it. We're going to keep going with some more positive news to start off our medical section. The flu season. That's right. You may remember that we're in the middle of the flu season, too. But in South Carolina and the entire country, it's been pretty limited this year. Could it be that more people got the flu shot or are wearing masks in public, socially distancing, and being better about hand hygiene? I think so. And I'm sure the ever-changing situation for schools has helped as well. What with those adorable little germy babies that y'all have not being running around everywhere. But just how different is this year from the last year? Well, in the Palmetto State, we should be in the thick of it right now. We are right around our historical peak for flu activity. And not so much. DHEC's Flu Watch as of February 6 shows that there have been 82 lab-confirmed cases of influenza for the 2020-2021 flu season, along with 97 hospitalizations and 13 deaths. Okay, so 82 confirmed cases, 97 hospitalizations, 13 deaths, right? That's where we are. For comparison, last year at this time, there had been more than 3,500 lab-confirmed cases, more than 1,600 hospitalizations, and 70 deaths. Yeah, things are really different this year. And for a nationwide comparison, Johns Hopkins points out that at this point in the season, there were nearly 100 times more cases last year than this year, even with approximately the same number of tests. Now, similar trends have also been present for other respiratory viruses this season. So when I see these numbers, it makes me think that I will have no problem masking in public next fall and next winter. I'm also done with shaking hands, but I do love washing my hands as frequently as possible. GJ is not trying to get sick if I don't have to. And you know how you can reduce your chances of getting sick? You get the flu shot. You wear a mask, limit your close contacts, stay home if you're sick, and wash your hands. The same with COVID. Oh my God, it all makes sense now. Oh, I'm seeing it. I see the connection. Wow. Next up, and some more good news. Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security reports that on February 9th, the U.S. FDA issued an emergency use authorization for Eli Lilly's monoclonal antibody cocktail. Now, I can't pronounce the two drugs in the cocktail, so here's a clip I found of someone on YouTube saying the two drugs.
Bamlanivimab, administered with etesevimab.
Thank you, Dr. Daniel Griffin. So yes,
bamlanivimab, administered with etesevimab,
is a treatment for COVID-19. The EUA specifically authorizes the treatment for mild to moderate COVID-19 symptoms in adults and pediatric patients aged 12 years and older who are at high risk for progressing to severe disease. Under the new EUA, the
bamlanivimab, administered with etesevimab,
monoclonal antibodies are administered together in a single infusion. The combination therapy can be administered as long as 10 days after symptom onset, but it is recommended to start treatment as soon as possible. Now, the new EUA gives clinicians another outpatient option for treating individuals who are not ill enough to require hospitalization, which can reduce the burden on hospitals and health systems. Wow, that was a really positive medical section, right? Huh? So, some good news. Obviously, there's still some bad news. There's plenty of bad news out there, but this is the latest I cherry-picked for y'all, and it was good. It's good. So let's stay positive here. Start of the week here. Welcome to our wind-down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic, and we want to hear your stories as well. Okay, we already know how many people out there have gotten their vaccines. So if you're one of the hundreds of thousands of people in the state who have been vaccinated, call us, tell us your story, tell us how you went through the process, maybe some struggle, maybe it was super easy. We want to know. 803-563-7169. Leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and how it all went for you. AT, we still got some voicemails, huh? Yeah? Maybe some vaccine voicemails?
Oh, baby. Do we ever have some vaccine voicemails? Oh, yeah.
Mamma Mia.
We got some. We're gonna, Mamma Mia, this is a spicy meatball, fella. Let me tell you what. Bellissimo. We're going to double dip.
And that's it.
We're going to double dip. Buonasera. Double dipping. Yeah, dubby dips, baby. So let's start with this first one. You ready?
Hey, when you hear your family, go ahead.
When you hear your family, okay? Unlimited soup, salad, breadsticks, and voicemails. Let's go.
My name is Karis, spelled K-A-R-I-S, and it rhymes with Paris. Well, I want to, and I'm calling from Greenville, South Carolina. I want to tell you that my grandma and grandpa got their booster on Monday. And so we're really excited. A show that I like to watch is Flick Flack Slam.
Hey, Karis, great to hear from you. And also super exciting news about your grandparents getting their shots. Glad to hear it.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely going to check out Slick Slime Sam. I don't know. I think that's what it's called. It sounds like a cool show, though. And shout out to your parents or grandparents who listen. Thank you so much.
Yes,
we need this absolutely blessed content.
Yes.
Okay. What a first dip. You know what I mean? Like, if any further dips are to that
solid,
level of dip.
You know?
Oh, man.
That's
what
the energy we need
episode.
From these voicemails. Yes, Karis.
Okay, Karis from Paris, we love it. All right, next one.
Hey, AT and Gavin, it is Cam from Columbia, South Carolina, AT's basement boy number two, repping for life. So I recently received my first dose of vaccine as a part of the volunteer program through Prisma Health. I volunteered down at Gamecock Park within the last week, and the vaccine site is largely pandemonium. You know, people are just so eager to get this. The lines are massive, as Gavin stated on one of the last episodes, going down Bluff Road. But all in all, it was about a six-hour shift and ended up being a lot of fun. I was on traffic control, just kind of running around, making sure that people didn't hit each other, backing in and out of spaces to check in to get their paperwork for the vaccine. And then they scheduled me to come back and get the shot a few days later. I know that Prisma is still looking for volunteers. You just have to find on their website where you can go to do that. And I don't know what other organizations are doing that in the country, but, you know, got my second dose scheduled for a few weeks from now and feeling, you know, a little optimism for the first time in a while. You know, still masking up, staying safe. Hope you guys are doing the same. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Cam, thank you so much. I only let the choicest people live in my basement, and this proves that. I mean, only the cream of the crop gets to go downstairs, okay?
Okay. It's a whole separate episode right there, but thanks for calling, Cam, and also great information about the volunteer program. Thanks for sharing that, and I think that's a great way for people who are younger, who want to get this vaccine ASAP, can do it by volunteering, giving their time and giving back and helping out, because they need help out there. There's a lot going on out there at Gamecock Park and other places where they're doing this. So
pandemonium
check out volunteer opportunities, folks.
Right.
Yeah.
If you want to get stuck and you're not in those early rounds, let's go, baby. You got to volunteer.
Yeah.
And then
if you
come with a certified thing that says you volunteered, you could maybe enter the basement. I don't know. But anyway, Gavin, what's up?
Did you want to talk about some sort of domestic bliss situation? Speaking of your home,
I don't know if it's bliss. I don't know if it's bliss or not, but
I might have misheard.
No, it was like it's sort of the depths of pandemic brain that both Caitlin and I have at the same time. Like
the opposite.
We
of
didn't
bliss.
Talk about yes. It wasn't bad. You know what I mean? But it really illustrates where both of our heads are at right now, and people could probably relate. But anyway, we didn't talk about this at first.
Go ahead, caller. I'm here to
Frazier,
listen.
Frazier, Dr. Frazier.
Yes, I'm like Lucy from Peanuts right now. Continue.
Mm-hmm. So at the same time on the same day, Caitlin and I didn't talk about this at first. She came up to me and showed me a TV mount for the wall, and I showed her a couch, and I was like, do you want to rearrange the living room? And she was like, do you want to rearrange the living room? And at the same time, there's so little we can control during this pandemic that we converged our Shire hive mind into wanting to change around the layout of our living room to do something.
Which is the best way to do that, right? Because that can be such a controversial thing, from what I've been told.
Yeah.
In domestic situations.
Could end relationships. Not me and Caitlin. We're strong, baby.
Oh,
so strong. Stronger than most, okay?
Well, yeah, you got the hive mind going. I mean, clearly very strong.
We don't even speak to each other. We just all eyes when we're home.
Yeah, and a lot of nonverbal. It's really kind of disturbing, but it's beautiful.
Non-verbal,
it's honestly
stuff. Beautiful. A lot of musks and pheromones, too. Either way.
The way you say that, like in that book that I was reading, like, that's how the aliens communicated. So it's really funny. That
yes,
that's
excellent, excellent, excellent. So we're already there. Anyway, Gavin, you have an update. You have James Island updates. Is that true?
Yeah, I want to give you a little idea, a little taste, a little glimpse of what the past few days have been like. Obviously, like pretty much everywhere in the state, it's been rainy and gray, so very wonderful time to be down here in the Lowcountry, which
mostly
just
like
me,
Seattle.
Yeah, is this what it's like? I mean, I know this is what Ohio's like because I went to school there for 4 years, and no thank you, done with that. But so we watched a little bit more TV than normal, but that's okay because the impeachment was on, so we were watching a little of that history. Then we started talking about, I mentioned how I talked to Dr. Donaldson for my show. So my dad recounted some of his stories from high school in Alexandria, Virginia in the 70s, which was very interesting to hear because I hadn't really heard those stories. And, you know, obviously it's a different kind of history, but it's all during such a very interesting time. You know, we're talking about the early 70s.
Tumultuous.
Yeah, late 60s. And kind of got him on a roll talking about his time when he actually played against the team from Remember the Titans, who went, you know, T.C. Williams High School, an integrated high school in Northern Virginia that they played against. And you know, if you read up on, like, you know, how Hollywood portrays a lot of these different moments in history, they obviously exaggerate a lot of things. And I read up on this one, too, which was really pretty, you know, I would say grossly exaggerated, but it was there. And he corroborated some of the things and just kind of mentioned just how bad it was in some situations sometimes with the racism. So it was just interesting to hear about that because I've never really talked to my parents about life in the 60s and 70s in that kind of detail, I guess. So I would encourage people to do that if their parents are still around to talk to them about different time periods where things weren't rosy. I don't know when things were rosy, come to think of it. It's not right now, that's for sure. So that was good. And we had a couple of drinks too, which was always good to get the conversation going. That's my
some
one regret
lubricant.
About the TV show. We just can't have a drink and start going. But as a result of those drinks, we had a little situation develop later in the evening Thursday where my stepmother misplaced her wedding ring as a result of, I think we were watching too much crime drama. So then she, for some reason, thought someone was going to break in. So she hid her wedding ring somewhere in the house, which was the drama for the next 2 days, where the ring was. We couldn't find it. We had to keep retracing steps. No one knew.
You have a reverse Lord of the Rings scenario going on.
Yes, yes. So what we had to do after careful consideration was to recreate the scene. And that included...
this is smart. This is smart. This is smart.
The crime drama got us in this situation, so crime drama was going to get us out. So actually, this was the second time, because this was Saturday night. We tried to do it Friday night. It didn't work out. So another martini was drank, and then another bottle or two of red wine was consumed. And things were working again. I felt it. And I knew, I predicted...
The juices were flowing, overflowing even.
I predicted from the beginning that I was going to be the one to find it, because I had like the clear set of eyes and my third eye.
You have notorious eagle. Oh, your third eye was wide open?
It was totally open.
All your chakras were completely aligned. I get it.
After a martini and some red wine, everything's hidden.
All those yoga people are all messing up.
And let me tell you, this is after they did like a whole dry January, right? So everyone's getting back in the groove here. So I'm like, okay, let me go to the bathroom. They haven't checked this downstairs bathroom. All the emphasis was upstairs in their room and their bathroom and their room. So I'm poking around because that's what I do when I'm in people's bathrooms. I like to see what's going on.
I open everything up. I try every pill.
You know, I saw like a brush my dad uses. Like, oh, I want to brush my hair really quick. And then I got a toothpick.
You are a serial killer, I think.
Yeah,
just a lazy one that doesn't close the jar.
I will also say I'm a savior because I found said ring in a bottle of Tylenol.
I think you put it there as a souvenir.
See, Yeah, that was the popular theory, right? That like I hit it and then I was the savior, right? That's how it goes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You orchestrated this whole thing because you are a sociopath.
Well, I did proclaim a finder's fee to be given to me if I do find it. So I'm told it's in the works, but we'll see.
It's probably another martini, right?
Yeah, something like that. But it was a good old time. But there were some despair amongst the crowd. So I'm glad we got that resolved. And you know, I was never going to keep it because it would have been talked about and never ending. Like it was just never, it was hanging over us the entire weekend. So
just like this entire episode, there are some dark spots, but it ends on some good news.
Yeah.
Huh?
And
great.
And I can relate because I've hidden things from myself before as well.
Oh, so. I have rings hidden everywhere in my house.
like I said, that I wear all my jewelry all the time.
All the time, so you never lose it. It makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. I bury mine in the backyard.
Yes, yes, next to all your valuables.
There are two options.
But I do want to wrap up with some adult real life news. It's not good or bad. It's real
brutal.
Life. It's on the scene.
You want me to play some jazz?
Yeah.
Okay.
So on Saturday, before the real good news happened, I went to Whole Foods with my dad. Mm-hmm. And I got to firsthand, you know, on location, on the ground, boots on the ground, watch how he curates a bag of the freshest green grapes for a solid 2 minutes.
Does he eat them?
Yeah, they eat them. I don't know. They do something with them. I don't know what. But I was just like, I don't know. I get a little stir crazy. I shop differently, okay? So I don't really take grapes from one bag and put them in another bag and all this stuff. And
is he breaking up bunches?
Oh, he wasn't breaking them up. He was just selecting the best bunches and putting them in the right bag. Which I'm told.
I give him a squeeze through the bag. I don't put my hand in the bag.
Oh, it was everything. So that's degenerative. I had to walk away for a little bit. I walked back. It was still going on. I was starting to realize
you thought the grocery store police were going to get him.
Well, it was Whole Foods, so I mean,
I can't be here. You're psycho, man.
If it was anything like when Trader Joe's yelled at me for having a reusable bag, I didn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah, you're gonna get the grocery store homicide team.
Whole
on
Foods West Ashley, you know they enforce things. But
I think that's what they based CSI Miami on. So.
Definitely. I'd watch that for. But so I was just having like flashbacks to my childhood with shopping experiences, and I had to walk away. And then it almost replicated itself when it came to the cauliflower selection, but it knocked out. And I gave my dad a hard time, and he said, "Don't blame me, blame my mother." So to all those mothers out there, it's your fault.
Thank you. Thanks, no thanks. Okay, yeah. Take it out. There Take it go. Out. We're so, sorry, moms.
Sorry, moms. No, we're just joking. We're just joking. Please listen. And thank you for listening. Mother's Day is coming up. A couple more months. We can all celebrate. And you can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on iTunes or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. You can stay up to date with the latest news on a newly revamped scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member, especially as the No Pledge Drive Pledge Drive continues to go on in public radio. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all that great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
If you hear it, it's okay for that first part because...
If you hear it,
you're already dead.
Oh, my God.
If you hear it, it's too late.
Oh, my God, I hear it.
It's coming.